At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal. At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
Step off, move. I said step off now, move!
This is Unit 5-2D. Level 5, room 2. The D is for day shift. 7 levels of factory, 7 rooms per level, 7 tables per room, 7 men each table. My name is Kino Loy. I'm the 5-2D unit manager. The 49 men in this room answer to me. Name?
Kiv. Kiv Gergold.
You won't be back. They only come to pick up the dead and bring their replacements. You're mine now. Off program! Back to work!
Hello and welcome to the Star Wars TV cast, broadcasting across the galaxy. This is episode 36. I'm Jonathan.
And I'm James. And this week, we're covering Andor, season 1, episode 8, Nokina 5.
And welcome, James, and greetings across the world. James is traveling again. And where do we find you this week, James?
I don't know. jet lag, sorry. I'm in Cape Town in South Africa, actually, which I have to say is incredibly beautiful. It's really nice.
I've never been. Very cool.
It is. Good.
And James had a bit of an adventure moment the other day.
Dream adventure.
Very jealous about this.
This is pretty epic. So obviously it's beautiful down here, and people have mentioned, oh, you can do helicopter rides and see the coast. I'm like, all right. So before I got here, I did some research, and apparently it is, I think, one of the only places in the world you can still do this. They have an operating Huey that did 2 tours of duty in Vietnam, and you throw down a little extra money and they call it the combat run. So they take all the doors off and they strap me into the gunner seat.
Yeah. Sadly,
no minigun. So I was,
no.
I was hoping for a paintball minigun, which would have been epic. Sort of like just go there. Yeah, and the pilots are great. They basically, we were the sound, by the way. The sound, everyone said, oh, you got to hear this. And like, you sit in that chopper and the sound of those blades as it's flying is incredible.
That's fantastic.
But it was pretty epic. It's like they drop to about 20 foot over the ocean as we're like ripping along, and then he's like pulling up and banking. it was a once in a lifetime sort of thing.
So, That's great.
Very exciting.
Over the deep blue ocean of South Africa, it would have been amazing.
And then across the brush and stuff, and they like down over the trees, and they're literally heading towards these trees, 20 foot off the ground, and he banks and pulls up around the trees, and then drops it and hovers as if we're about to drop a squad onto the ground. It was pretty. I was having some moments.
You didn't enjoy that at all, did you, James?
No, not at all. I just, the amount of footage on my iPhone is ridiculous. And the other thing is, like, I'm holding on to my iPhone for dear life before we get on, they're like, okay, take your caps off, take this off, take that off. No, and I'm like, oh, come on. It's like, you know, when you think you get on a ride
on a roller coaster,
a fun fair or something, and you're like, oh, come on, that's right. I'm literally gripping my iPhone for dear life because I'm trying to get these shots, and the thing is, like, the wind is just whipping through that thing.
But that's wild.
Yeah, it was pretty special, I have to say.
And did they come in for a combat landing?
no, we no, I think it was pretty safe landing. Yeah, regular landing.
Oh, yeah, back at the airport, so I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Had to follow some rules.
Some rules, yeah. So there are some rules in South Africa, apparently. So.
Yeah, well, that sounds excellent. I'm very jealous of that. Yeah, and yeah. So, here we are back in space, and we are back with Narkina 5. And actually, before we get started, I had a comment from Alma Contreras, and she said regarding Andor, I got to get caught up now that the Rings and Dragons are done. I can get back into Star Wars. And so I thought we'd like to welcome all on board, all the Rings and Dragons fans. I know you've been enjoying the series and hope you're all catching up now and will be with us for the ride into the end of the season of Andor. It looks like it's going to be good. Have you been watching any of those two, James?
I actually just started watching House of Dragons last night, the night before, and I'm really liking it. I won't lie, I've tried to watch Rings of Power, and as everyone says, it's incredibly beautiful and really good, but I just found it very slow, and there's just too much time spent on cute little hobbity sorts of people in the first one. There's little elf people, and I'm like, I'll get there, but like...
If you can get through to that, because the Elrond and the dwarves parts are really great. There's some really good parts of it. But I binged all of Dragons, no spoilers, binged all of Dragons, and it just keeps getting better and better. And Doctor Who certainly owns his part.
It feels really good. I mean, I was like skeptical when they're like, oh, we're going to do a prequel, you know, but it seems to have all the weights of the original. Yep. So I'm excited to binge the whole of it on my flight home, the 16 hours on the plane.
Welcome many new listeners, and to our regular listeners, thanks for staying with us, and let's get into a season. Well, actually, we're going to start with the Star Wars question of the week. So the Star Wars question of the week this week is, if you could spend a day on Tatooine, what would you do, where would you go, and with who? James?
I'm gonna start this off by saying I do this every time. It's like I answer the question before looking at reader feedback, so I don't try and outgun anyone or something. So like I'm probably repeating other people that we're going to mention here, but I would spend a day with Annie. I would like to I want to learn how to be a mechanic. I want to basically work the pit lane at the podcast. I want to know how to I want to fix and run those engines.
At the pod races, the podcast.
Yeah. The podcast, sorry. But, I mean, for all of its problems with the prequels, I just love the sort of the technical. Again, back to the Star Wars world of it's all sort of nuts and bolts and clanking, very mechanical. And just like the way they pull apart those engines and like build it and all the rest of it. I was like, I think, I'd like to... I mean, there's many things, you know. I could go bantha hunting. I could, try. I could go digging for, sarlacc. I don't know, but that was my first initial thing. Was like, I want to basically ride
in the pits at the pod races.
I want to do some pod racing, racing and learning. So
that was one of the great scenes in the prequels, in the first one, those pod racings. Apart from the two-headed. Commentators, but that would actually be in the only in Star Wars section. So I have to pay that actually.
We need more two-headed. We can talk about this later, but I think we need more two-headed aliens. But anyway, from the readers though, then let's go to Sherry Morford. It's like I'd hang out in the cantina in Mos Eisley. Try all the drinks and people watch, and alien watch, obviously. Maybe try to pick up a dreamy smuggler and scoundrel. Now, Sherry. I just want to check. Sherry, I want to check, is that a dreamy smuggler stroke scoundrel, or you want one of both? I was thinking, you're getting a bit greedy there, girl. I think it was a bit too much. Mike Velez says, again, he would like to try and get in a pod race. I'm like, I'm with you there, son. I'll be in your pit team. And then David SK is replying to both of these. Why not both? Hang out at the cantina, get hopped up on some blue milk, and then see what happens in a pod race. I think that's probably the best way to do a pod race, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Russell Piner, I'd go to Toshi Station to pick up some power converters with Luke's buddies. Yes. Sounds like a blast, of course, of course, of course. And I don't know, and if you haven't seen it, there's a deleted scene of actually Luke going to the Toshi Station, so check that out. It's on YouTube somewhere. Yeah, the deleted scene is Luke goes to Toshi Station and meets up with Biggs, has a hang around with him. So nice. It's quite interesting, yeah. All right, and Derek O'Neill, I'd head to Toshi Stations to get some power converters. Someone has to finally finish the work Luke neglected. A common theme. And Damien Vitale, hang out in the cantina with Han Solo, of course, of course.
Megan Dively-Layman says, put on some eclipse glasses and take in the setting suns. Ah, the two suns. Brad Hulk says, Toshi Station, of course. I mean, a common theme here and there. Yeah. Yawn Ireland. I'm sick and tired of Tatooine. I'd never go there. Come on, Yawn. Come on. And then our good old friend here, Jeffrey Labby. Rub lotion on my skin.
Yeah, SPF right, 1000, I think.
I have visions now of Jeff in Jabba's like throne room in his bikini putting on his lotion. So if that makes anyone else feel a little ill, that's kind of... All right. Sorry about that, Jeffrey.
That's funny. All right. So, James, what were your first thoughts?
My first thoughts, well, as I was sat here sipping on my squigs, I was pondering, again, when this is where we finally wanted to get to, I think. This is like all of the threads are starting to slowly be pulled in together. You know, and it was like, there's so many great characters that we've been talking about, like how's this going to work, how that's what, and they're all being pulled together. It's like the gravity of a black hole here. So finally, Miro and Khan sort of connect, and we, you know, and then we have Bix who's back, which I love, and then she, you know, and we see her with Miro as well. So again, no spoilers, not jumping ahead, but I was quite.
And you enjoyed the episode?
Yeah,
you enjoyed it.
Did. Yeah. It was one of those where I was like, I'm going to force myself to enjoy this. And I'm like, but then, well, we will get into it, but there's obviously a mind-blowing sort of like parts to it that I think incredible. And then there's some slower bits. But I think in general, a perfect sort of balanced episode because it pulls in a lot of threads and we can see this build coming again. We can see the formula now and it's starting to nicely build up and build up. So as ever, I enjoyed it.
Good. Yeah, I thought it was tense and riveting, and I just love living in this world and taking in the lore. And the production design this week was outstanding, I thought. The look and feel of everything was amazing. But we'll get to that later. I am feeling, you know, people's concern about the pacing at some times. And I do enjoy the you know, as I've said a million times, the slow burn of it. But with last week's intermittent episode, this felt like it was another opening. And I found out and Jason mentioned it last week, actually, that there's a new director this week. And so I thought the arcs were going to go 3-3-3-3, you know, four sets of three.
Yeah, consistent.
But it went 3-3-1, and then 3, and then the last two, are going to be, those are going to be the arcs. So I felt this is, you know, a double, we got a second first episode. And so I am craving a little bit of action, but I am loving it at the same time.
I hear you, but I think this had action and tension in a different way. And like the pacing isn't that slow because as we'll get on to like our dear beloved hero and his situation, but the intensity of it is... keeps it flowing, even if it isn't, even if it isn't pew 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 town. There's no sort of laser fire and like stormtroopers being thrown.
But I do understand people's frustrations with it.
Yeah, it is a Star Wars show, and Star Wars is built on it is fantasy adventure, and we do seem to be in a very highbrow sort of like moody world. So I understand people's pacing problems as well.
It's almost like a drama rather than an action movie, as all the other stories are, as we've mentioned before. But I kind of think it kind of is an analogous to Game of Thrones, how it's a lot of Game of Thrones is a lot of conversations punctuated by moments of action and all those, you know, those moments are culminating from big lead ups.
Exactly. I mean, I had a conversation with yesterday on my job with somebody else who's like, so funny when you find out like one of your clients is she's actually a big nerd as well. It's great. Yeah. But we're talking about this and how I loved Battlestar Galactica, and that was similar to this. It was lots of politics and lots of conversation, and then it would explode into action here and there and stuff. And I think, and we're both fans of The Expanse as well, and I think that's another good example of like a more grown-up science fiction world. And we're just, it's a little tricky for some people to handle Star Wars, I think, in that mindset, because you're so used to it being very sort of like clean, sort of like exciting good versus evil, like you know, we have a plan, we must take
clearly defined,
oh no, they captured us, da 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 da, and then now we have a multi-layer complex sort of show, which is great. But yeah, I agree, it's the pacing is, you know, throwing some people off a bit, I guess.
But loyal listeners, I know you are with us and you're enjoying it along with us, so keep it going.
Let's stop the slow pacing of us two talking crap and let's get into the show.
Exactly.
We're like slow burning like ourselves here. Sorry, everybody.
This episode, Narkeena 5, was directed by Toby Haynes, who did a couple of episodes of Black Mirror, written by Bo Willimon, and created, of course, by Tony Gilroy. So Cassian is in prison, Mothma and Luthen are feeling the pressure, and the Empire are on the hunt. So James, you want to kick off with your first point?
Oh, I think it's like one we both love. It's like Narkeena 5.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great. But I do love the brutal prison transfer from the start. I mean, remember like last week we have Cassian is strolling along Miami Beach, like with the, you know, the booze sipping aliens and the bad music.
Space
and then he's thrown into court and Space Miami vice. And I love the fact that he's, you know, and all of a sudden these shore troopers, it's almost like Order 66 is like, it's a new version of it, because they've all just switched into arsehole mode.
Yep.
And they're like, move. Yep. And it's and just the aggressive way that they're, you know, they're dragged to these transport ships. And I love the fact that it's one of those classic overcast days. We've all been that. We've gone on holiday and one day it's all sunny and then the next day it's like just and it's, you know, and they're all being dragged out, and then, you know, and he's you know, like the old, the sparkly sort of electro prods like threatened with him again. I'm a tourist.
But wasn't that set amazing, that location or wherever it was shot, in that bowl with the transports landing everywhere. I thought that was a classic.
Almost a mini Colosseum, kind of like, just, you know, the steps up in stone and all the rest of it. But I thought there was, you know, it was great. And then obviously he's, you know, they're thrown into this ship, and I love that they sit down and then like the electro sort of magnetic sort of clamps come on, and they're all told to kick off their shoes. And I'm like, it's a bit weird. And then we're off. And we're off to Narkeena 5, and why don't you take over for a bit? Because I know this.
Speaking of the magnetic cuffs, I couldn't figure out how it actually happened, but they obviously magnetized together, and then in the arms of the seat, the magnets went opposite, and they clamped their arms to that seat. And getting their shoes off was a little bit of a worry, and it, you know, it's another kind of Empire tactic of dehumanizing, apart from the practical effect of it later on. But I love the establishing shot as we come flying into to Narkeena 5, and you see the big ocean and the underwater factories that are dotted around this giant sea or lake. And it looks like they generate hydroelectricity with those giant drains.
Yeah. Well, I think it's maybe it's cooling system.
Right.
It's probably sucking water in because, as we'll see when they land, there's an awful lot of steam, Jonathan. Again,
yeah,
there's an awful lot
of
steam.
Of course there is.
So this is the question of where all those steam pipes are. In it's here on Narkina.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're amazing. Those like what are they, hexagonal, octagonal sort of like landing pads at the top, and each corner has the sucking sort of water down it. And it's just another beautiful Star Wars world. Established,
yeah, great
you know,
world
in an
building
shot.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Great world building again, and it's just like it's just so impressive to see that sort of thing and the size and scale of it. And as the transport comes in, it gets smaller and smaller and smaller. As the dread
scale
gets more and more and more, you're like, oh no, what's he in for here? But then we get to the dock, and his friend says, take a deep lung full. This may be the last fresh air you breathe. And then take it from here, James.
So they're all stood there, no shoes on, like, what the hell's happening? And I love it. And we get these Imperial troopers come in, and like, and I have to say, those sneakers are pretty awesome.
Yeah,
aren't they?
Well, I want them for my snowboard.
No, I need to check when I get back home, but I bought some pretty outlandish Puma high tops last year, which my wife hates. So
that's funny.
As you can imagine, my wife is very fashionable.
Yeah,
anyway,
no wives like a Puma high top.
Yeah, and I just thought, oh, those shoes are awesome, but they're also so out of character with like an Imperial uniform. Everything else is greys or whites or blacks or something, and then you've got these like you know, like you said, you've got Technicolor Burtons from like the 20th century.
Yeah.
Like, it's just
with a flash
bindings.
Of orange on it.
Yeah, 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 they're great. Oh, and they just come in, and the whole spiel about like you know I'm only gonna have to say this once, and then he flips the switch.
Yeah,
and the tungstoid steel floor, and this is level one.
Yeah.
Of three. And I was like, oh my God. But again,
but
when
they got electrocuted, I thought they looked like an interpretive dance squad. They all just hit this pose. I couldn't help but laugh for a second.
It's a flash dance. Like, yeah. Here we go. It's a flash mob coming on. Here we go. No.
Yeah.
When I click this button, we'll all listen to this track.
that psycho lieutenant that was, with these bright blue eyes and a little grin behind him, like he was enjoying it just a little bit too much.
Just an evil fucker, isn't he? I've got remote control now. I can control everybody.
One of the things he said was, you may be surprised by our minimally invasive enforcement techniques.
Yes, yeah. Those have been incarcerated before. Maybe.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's brilliant. But I love, if I may, I'll just talk about design again. I mean, we're now, it's just clinical, isn't it? And it's all white. And I have to say, like, it reminded me of Clockwork Orange.
Yeah.
Or something like this, because it's all white and you've got white neon, and then their jumpsuits are white just with a splash of orange on them as well. Again, we've got another great sort of production design on another planet.
Well, I thought some other references were Logan's Run and and even George Lucas's first film, THX 1138. Which was his precursor to everything, and they were all in white jumpsuits as well. And but the other thing I thought reminded me of was Squid Games when they got into the area where they were all working. Thought there was a little bit of a Squid Game reference in there as well.
I watched the first episode. I'm sorry, I'm probably gonna get chastised for that.
You haven't watched it yet?
I watched one episode, and then
it's really good.
I went off target on something else. I think. But yeah, I should get back into it. Yeah, but yes, I get that from what I've seen from the art direction. Yeah,
But it had that really 70s feel, and that synth soundtrack that came in was really set your nerves jangling.
I'm going to talk about that in a bit because there's I'm going to get a little bit nerdy with the sound because it's very very nicely handled. But yeah, and so we've established now this cold clinical sort of prison factory basically. And then Supreme Leader Snoke seems to have turned up to run the squad. The old Andy Serkis is back.
Yeah.
Oh, and And before anyone goes crazy and goes down rabbit holes, I did a little bit of this, and this is not the precursor. This is not how, you know, Snoke became who he was. It's just the fact that I guess they love Andy, and so he got another part.
I always get surprised and don't recognize him and think he does, like, because I kind of found him a bit annoying when he does too many of the of the motion capture things, but when I see him in live action, I'm like, oh, he's really good. Like what was the Marvel movie?
When he's in Black Panther, and he's
a bad guy in Black Panther, and yeah, I thought he was great in that. But I like how they said you've all been assessed as labor worthy, and it seems that what's happening is that with the poured instructions from the ISB that they're just arresting people and recruiting slave labor.
Yeah, I mean, again, with nuances of Nazi Germany and just like concentration camps and like work camps and stuff. But I'm glad that they've written this into the script, so we now know how they managed to build a million Star Destroyers so quickly. Because they've got the size of that factory when it pulls out and they're in the chamber, in the corridors, the transfer corridors between shifts and stuff. And you imagine if they obviously have hundreds of planets like this, because even when Andor is like put on his transfer ship, there's three or four there ready to go at that moment. And it's like, you know, it's just fresh meat every hour just churning out. So the old Empire's Pod is working for them.
Yeah, no, exactly right. And Andy Serkis's Kino Loy, I love it when he describes the state of the place, which is seven levels of factory, seven rooms per level, seven tables per room, and seven men each table. And I just thought the way, and then that perfectly rounds out with him to 50 men in each section.
Of course.
But as he kept moving into the facility, you just kept feeling doors close behind him, one after the other. And, you know, he's just getting lower and lower and lower, which is a theme in Star Wars, is your status actually reflects how high off the ground you are.
just
kept going deep underwater, deeper and deeper underwater. One of the other things they said, you know, productivity is encouraged and evaluation is constant. And so what did you think they were building?
Oh, that's what I wanted to know. Like, what I was trying to, like, I didn't do it, but I should have, like, I was trying to, like, start pulling up schematics of TIE fighters or things like that. I'm like, because it's like, they're all building the same thing, like that, was it the eight-pointed sort of cog kind of thing or something. I'm just wondering, it's like, you know, is this an Imperial Standard Lego brick
that things are built from,
you know, it's like, I don't know. But then as we joke about it, you know, they've got hundreds of thousands of these factories in order to build everything. So I presume each factory just builds one element.
One part, Well, at first I thought they were TIE fighter engines, but then on further reviews and further reflection, I think they might be Death Star parts. And so to build the Death Star, there's, you know, all these factories, to build a planet or a small moon, as we all know, that you're not just on the surface, you're on the inside of it as well. So they have all these factories around, just as you say, building these Lego parts for. I think, yeah, maybe, you know, in my mind, they are parts for the Death Star.
Well, we'll speak to Cassie, and he has the schematics for the Death Star.
Yeah, that's true.
We need to pull that up. Somebody bring up their R2 droid. Let's have a look at those schematics again. See if we can find these cogs. First of all, I also thought, well, maybe, you know, like the arms that come out from the TIE fighter to connect to the wing. Is that piece? So if anyone knows or anyone wants to dig really deep, we'd love to see your schematics of what these pieces are for.
I've seen only theories online, and but it would be, someone needs to get the book of Star Wars and have a look at the schematics for sure.
Yeah, if you don't mind. Sadly, I'm sure I've got one at home. I've got that blueprint book, actually. You know, they did that great blueprint book where it's got all the ships. I wonder if I need an updated version of that. Can I talk about the music and just how I think that pulls us into it? I mean, I think this, I mean, again, I've touched on this before, how I think the music is great in this show and how it's drifted away from John Williams, but in a good way. And I really feel we've moved away a little bit from John Williams, but still keeping in that world. And this, to me, is special. And I don't know if it's just me and, like, my ears are going or something, but, like, I felt the music was more creepy this week.
Yeah.
Definite sort of twangs of Vangelis, definite twangs of John Carpenter,
yeah,
and a feeling of, like, some of the darker sort of tracks from Vangelis's Blade Runner.
Yeah, but right.
Any of the Narcina
Very John Carpenter,
Yeah, very John Carpenter as well. Some of the the nuances and the music in there. But there are definite moments, and I swear that on the scenes just on Narcina 5, that the sound is warped. If you listen to it, there's a warble and a warp. It's almost distorting. Like it's almost like, you know, just screwing with your brain a little bit. And
that's
just
what I thought as well. Like because it's just a single notes on a synthesizer going up and down. And when they hold it wavers. And you do get that. It's almost like nails down a chalkboard.
Exactly. There's something off with it, which is great. And it's just that. And I think that just screws with you a bit. And I thought that was very clever. Again, the use of sound is brilliant in this show. And I thought very, very cleverly done. And it kind of brings me on to my next sort of point, which I'd love. We have this every week and everything, but like this week, because the way it succinctly jumps between each world and each situation, it's a great way how they use color.
In
different worlds and stuff. So Narcina 5, we have in this pure white sterile thing. And then later on, when we get to see my hero, we go to Segre Milo, and it's all dirty greys and like cold, you know, like rocks and stuff. But then in between that, we see Mon Mothma's party in its opulent, rich, warm colours. And then, of course, we have the bureaus, both the ISB and Khan's bureau, which are clinically sort of imperial.
Yeah.
And I just love the way that we're cutting from situation to situation and back. And as we do, it's very obvious where we are because the color palette changes as we go as well. And I just thought it was a really nice piece of storytelling.
Yeah, absolutely. It really does help to separate each of the storylines on it, and
the pace with each one as well. I think as well, it's like, you know, the music and the color and the pace just jumps like very cleanly, but it flows because the way it's paced together. So.
Yeah, I agree. And but just getting back to Narcina 5 as well, just want to go back into that room when they're building everything. And how everything just, you know, again, we were talking about how everything's big and clanking. Things would just slot together. And I just enjoyed watching them work on putting those parts together and the big cranks and all of that sort of thing.
But it's the Star Wars world. It feels really, that there's a real heaviness clunk to when they're putting those arms into place and the ratchets are going and it's all...
And each piece felt very heavy as well. You know, it had a weight to it and you could feel them struggling. And when they go hands up, I thought that was such a nice touch because they're thinking about not getting their hands caught in the equipment and crushed. So that was kind of real world and it grounds you again.
Can I just make one point while we're in this room again? So, like, have you formulated an escape plan yet, Jonathan, from this room that you worked away at?
Well, that was the other thing because he barely says a word coming down. And I haven't formulated an escape plan, but I have noticed a couple of things. With the escape,
let's see if we're on target here. Go on.
Stay on target. We're too close. Stay on target.
So the first one was when he notices the boot rack, the rack of boots.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
And
you've got unattended there's six sets of boots or whatever that are unattended. They're not locked away.
Yeah.
Yes. Right.
And then the other one was when they're in waiting in line to change day to night shift. And, one of them was signing to the other prisoners.
Oh yeah, that could be a plan for me.
There might be some communication going on there, a way of communicating. And then the other thing that which I thought was a bit of a strange bit, but you know, when things are in there, they're in there for a reason, was when he was waiting to go down the lift into the production room, there was a guy that was late, and yes. You know, and he says, oh, you know, the transfer has right over tech, you know, transfer over tech. And so I think that
delivery over tech, and I think this is it. I think that's a great word. Said. And by that, I think I mean delivery of parts. I think even the Imperials running.
Oh, I thought
it was
delivery
to
of. I thought it was delivery of the prisoners, but
you could well be right. I mean, yeah. In my head, I was just thinking that this is. Everyone is under pressure all the way up the chain. It's not just the prisoners, because like these other guys, if they don't perform, if they don't meet their quotas, then you know the sector sort of like leader is going to come down on them like a ton of bricks as well. So on back to the escape plan.
Well, they're there
and they're physically holding nuts and bolts and clanking this together, and yet they're given like laser guns to tidy something up, aren't they? Like, I mean, wonder if one of those can go missing. Them and a pair of boots, and you're off to the races, aren't you?
Yeah,
we will see. Anyway,
but and I wonder if the you know when the guy suicided by walking out onto the floor.
Oh God.
Yeah, I mean, wasn't that's such a great set, isn't it? As well, the sleeping quarters. With the little pods, it actually looks like a really nice business class seat. I thought.
Well, it looks like, doesn't it look like sort of the hotels in Japan?
Yeah, that's like true.
Little pods. Not that I've stayed. I know you have, but I've seen pictures of them. But but the hot floor. I mean, that's it. The language as well. Hot floor on program. On program.
And
own program is great. I'm going to use that with my kids. On program. It was like, sit down on program, like hands on your head.
And he only just made it, didn't he? When it was just it was flashing and it went dark, and he goes, "Oh, I better step off the floor." And he just made it.
I thought that was a little bit. I was like, "Oh, come on!" It's so obvious for a TV or a movie. Is he not? Of course, he's going to bloody step off.
Of course.
But when the guy commits suicide by floor, as we call it. And the other guys are complaining, "No, I'm going to smell him all night."
Yeah, like, so he's annoying.
Because he's electrified. He's probably like crispy bacon on the floor. Mm. And it's like another clean, brutal piece of Imperial sort of design.
Very nice. And going back to the design of the prison, I think it's just so genius how they don't have any cell doors. There's no bars because the floor, you don't need anything. The idea of in the production rooms is the top table wins flavor and the last place gets fried. Yes. So can you imagine that there's gruel that's just coming out of that tube that onto his plate? And like only one table actually gets flavor added to it. But I actually really enjoyed when he put his plate back in the wall, how nicely it fit in, and the spoon was in the back.
That was because I was surprised it was a plate and a spoon, because I thought it was just a pipe and they literally just got suck on the pipe, which is what I'd do because I'm just an animal. And a lot of it goes, "Oh, this will all be cleaned." So like they do have cleaners that come in and clean.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting.
And then they're not complete animals, the Empire. Mm. They do look after them a little bit. So.
But that's, again, going back to if you have the best uniforms, you're probably the bad guys. It seems like if you have the best designed prisons, you might well be the bad guys as well. But it was interesting when they first arrived, and I think you mentioned it before, that guy says, for those of you that have been incarcerated before, you might notice how clean and nice it is here. But you will get electrocuted if you step out of line.
You will get electrocuted if you do anything. He's very smug about his 5-star Yelp rating for his prison.
The other thing that was really full on was the shower scene when all those guys were standing there naked of all different shapes and size and everything and just getting sprayed with disinfectant. It didn't even look like they were getting wet, but just all of them standing in a room.
Steam cleaned. While we're talking about naked workmen.
Showering.
Showering. But they're all human again. We're back to everyone they've captured is... I mean, maybe that's a case of these parts specifically need human hands. And Maybe there's other... Like, again, I guess when they're putting them on the transports, they ask them what their home world is, and that defines where they send them. So maybe that's that. I mean, maybe there are...
That's an interesting
maybe
idea.
There's other... prison facilities that are all run by Wookiees. Who knows? But I'd like to see that one.
Yeah, no, that's actually true.
Tony, can we see a Wookiee prison camp, please?
Well, that was in Solo, wasn't it? when all the Wookiees down in the mine. Yeah. So there you go. Yeah,
I've blocked that out of my memory.
So. I know. There were some good bits in it, though. What's some other points here? When they were introducing all the other workers on his table, one of them was called Melshi. And he actually turns up in Rogue One.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I read that.
He
also
was like one of
I'm
the...
I'm trying to think, where was it? Is he in the squad or where is he in?
Oh, he was on the ship when they go to Scarif, and he was on the ground and runs over to try and rescue someone that was hit, and he gets hit himself. Oh. But, you know.
So hold on a minute. So then that means there must be a prison break. It's not just Cassian gets out. He's going to get a full prison break here.
Yeah. And all these guys, I mean, who knows who makes it out, but obviously these two make it out together.
Yeah.
And then join the rebellion together. So it's a really nice, very, very subtle touch that they did to just put him in there, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I was about to say we might have given him the kiss of death, but we know he lives to Rogue One because usually we speculate how someone's going to be a great character and then they get killed off. I mean, I'm not bitter or anything, but let's go back to my friend Skeen. I'm not bitter about this, but at least we know like Melshi does survive because he manages to get killed in Rogue One along with everybody else. So yeah.
he only missed out on about half an hour of extra life, I think.
Yeah. I mean, this place, like. You know, I mean, obviously the episode is called Narkeena Fire for a reason because it's an epic sort of like introduction to this place and stuff. But we could drivel on about this for the whole podcast, but probably shouldn't do that, Jonathan.
Yes, shall we move on? Of course, I'd like to go back to my favorite character, Cyril Khan, and. When you're sitting in a vast, anonymous corporate structure, you don't want it to be singled out. And we actually see him give a big gulp when the two officers stand before his station as he slowly looks up.
But he's mental. He just wants trouble. He's like, he's brilliant. Yeah.
And I love how obsessed he is about this. And when he gets taken away, and as my prediction was correct, that he and Dedra are going to team up. I know they will eventually, obviously not in this episode, but I do feel a Dedra Khan team up coming. So he's just sitting there filing, search orders for Cassian Andor, who's a missing fuel specialist, an unresponsive energy engineer, a fuel purity field officer suspected of forging Imperial reports.
He's overachiever, just like... Yeah. Like mentalist, basically.
He's very upright.
Very upright, and he, I don't know. He just doesn't seem to have any sort of inkling of self-preservation. He's quite happy to like butt up against the Empire just to get noticed. As I've always said, like Dedra is like one of my favorites.
Yeah.
She's just great, and I love in this. She really got to sort of shine in this one a bit, and it's like every line she delivered. Is with just the right precise cold tone.
Yeah, that like clip just, in her voice.
She's just like the most eloquently evil person you could ever meet, and she has that same kind of delivery, even when she's talking to her superiors.
Yeah,
there's a clever. I mean, she obviously like she pulls back slightly here and there, but like just her put downs are brilliant. Like you know, as you mentioned when. We have old Cyril sort of like list. She's listing all of his like his complaints with Cassian, and then she's inquires, "What is this? Public safety?" Because he's not doing his job. But
kind of looks up sheepishly.
The pair of them like, and when they're in that, you know, he's again and again. I think when we cut to that room and he's in the chair about to be interrogated for it, again, perfect sort of framing
I love all that perfectly balanced, you know, symmetrical framing that they did in this episode, and that was another beautiful interrogation room. If I'm going to be interrogated, I would like to be in that room, I think.
Well, you wouldn't. Until the torture droid comes in.
Yeah, exactly.
And now, Your Highness, we will discuss the location of your hidden level base.
Hello,
I loved her giant iPad with the carrying case around it.
Now we've talked about this. It's the other franchise that uses iPads. I think they use Kindles here.
Yeah,
everything's very monochromatic on the screens.
Well, I love the green and black screen on his pod. I thought that was great.
I love that because it's indecipherable, isn't it? It's like we're clearly dealing with humans who speak English, and yet everything on screen is in a different like font and is in a different design. Language, but yeah, very clever, very nice. Yeah.
Well, I loved, as you were saying, that when she was talking, giving her presentation her report on things, she's being very firm and everything, and then she just pauses, wondering if it's getting through, and then Admiral Yularen just goes, "I'm listening," and he's like, "Ooh, yes. Here we go." And it was interesting to have Major Partagas from being like the top guy to now just sitting down to the side and was saying that he'd been convinced by Dedra, but there was interesting the different power dynamic when the admiral came in.
Yeah, and also the way that he sort of like he feels that Dedra's overstepped her mark.
Yeah,
and then he sort of steps in to try and sort of like help her out.
Yeah, has her back. And on further research on Admiral Yularen, he not only was in the original New Hope sitting at the table with Darth Vader, but he was actually a general in the Republic Army during the Clone Wars and commanded Anakin Skywalker's command ship. So he was he's had a long arc of fighting with the military good guys and now being with the bad guys. But I think if he's a naval man, it all depends on who's commanding the Navy.
It's down to politics, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Who's, you know, who is your commander-in-chief, really? Mm. You just follow without question. Mm. I was only following orders.
But I thought it was really telling of Cyril when he said, "I was a good deputy inspector."
Yes, yes, that's brilliant. Yeah. Like, he's desperate now. She's leaving the room. This is his last chance. That's
and she's brilliant. Like, "I wish you luck." But I thought I thought on third go he'd get through to her, but she still left him behind, so... I am looking forward to the team up eventually because I can't wait for Cyril to go full Khan, basically.
Full Khan. But I mean, that whole scene was brilliant. He's service to the Empire. You just said it.
Yeah.
You
know,
can one ever be too aggressive in preserving order?
Yeah, exactly.
It's brilliant. It's like, you are just perfect mental level to be working for the ISB. But again, Deirdre just like, she's not convinced he's a good asset yet. And
no.
She just her tone and just the way she delivers, "Raise the alarm one more time and it won't be me you're speaking to." And I'm just like, I'm thinking, like, and then Cyril's got this little smile like, "I'm going to raise the alarm again." And I'm just wondering if next time it's going to be Tarkin or Vader who comes through the door and he's going to go, "Oh, fuck. Nice. Shouldn't have done that, should I, really?"
I wonder if we will get any of those cameos. I don't think we will, but maybe that's... maybe we will, maybe we won't.
I think you've got... I mean, the amount of talk about the Emperor and with everything with Mon Mothma, there's got to be some drifting sort of like shot of... Even if it's just his cloak, you've got to see like Palpatine at some point, I'm sure.
Well, I was just intimidated by the mere mention of them, that these guys are reporting to him daily, to know that even though he's not in this, you can feel him in the background of everything.
Oh, the puppet master.
Everything that has transpired has done so according to my design.
But yes, I'm very excited. I think there will be a team up, as you say, at some point what shape or form, I don't know. But I mean, as we know, I kind of obsess over the Deirdre character and how she's played and like Denise Goff and everything. But there's people are like now begging for a spin-off where she joins the rebellion and stuff. And I'm like, I'm all in for that. I mean,
that's interesting that you say that because, you know, could that be her arc or do you think she's Empire through and through?
I mean, it's one of those. I mean, she feels like if you cut her to the core, she's like Empire all the way through. But then who knows what's around the corner, what's going to happen that could traumatize her. She could be a deep agent. But I don't think so. I mean, that's just...
I don't think so.
At this point, they've played her so well as this like pure, like clinical, like... Imperial sort of like
corporate functional, you know, she's all for the corporation.
She's just focused on Yeah, yeah.
And that's the thing with the empire and the, you know, as with all corporate culture, is the higher you get, the more rewards you get, and everyone's vying against each other to climb the empire's ladder. And it was interesting to see Blevin just get sidelined again.
Yeah, yeah. He's not, do we see him this week? Or
I don't think he is, but I think he was sitting at the table. But he's just out now.
Sitting at the table, but yeah,
and
Dendra's
just taken his spot and taken his territory and moving forward with it.
I wonder if she goes like she almost goes fanatical with Khan, and we end up with her going rogue to go like. You know,
right.
Super imperial, hunt them down no matter what.
Yeah.
But she seems to be like she's putting her design, she's putting her package for her whole like kit that she wants. And, you know, she wants a code droid, she wants a full like garrison of tech and all the rest of it. And it seems like she's going to get everything she needs from, you know, to drill down as we
down. But I think she got it because she said all communications. Important going either way. And so that's what happened to Bix when she got captured, is that the Empire picked up on her outgoing message. So it was, in the end, fortuitous that Luthen didn't take the call.
Yeah, I mean, it's fortuitous. I think they were tracking that. I don't think they traced it because they already knew they knew Cassian's background, and I think they probably knew of Bix's relationship. So they were already looking for her, right?
Well, it's not, no, because like,
it was no.
Because what I thought that on too, but on third view, I realized that she goes into the other mechanic store, and the guy goes up,
the parts
place, and he says, "Oh, you know, business is down since the hotel's been taken over," and that's more of the Empire not even thinking about economic impact of when they take over a building. But she goes and climbs the tower and makes a call, and that's the guy that got hauled away, that was being tortured when she went in there.
So he got tortured and told her his name,
and then she got called out in the street. And so I think that Dedra's package of things have led to, you know, the first capture of someone very close to Cassian.
She's already getting results, is old Dedra. Employee of the month plaque going up with her face.
But luckily, Cassian's mum has, you know, trying to rediscover the tunnel that will lead under the hotel.
I think a plan of rescue is developing. Yeah, plan of rescue is developing. I hope Marva just doesn't sort of die of pneumonia before they sort of get off planet. I mean, she's drinking a Lemsip. They bring her a space Lemsip. And she's like,
I think Cinta is being left behind. So I imagine there might be a Marva Cinta team up to go into the tunnel to bust out Bix.
But let's talk about Cinta as well. I mean, the Cinta and Vel thing. Like Cinta, I mean, that little interaction between the two, I mean, it's a great, it just establishes again that like Cinta is a true fanatic.
Yeah.
And Vel is a hopeless romantic.
Yeah.
all she wants is, we've been apart too long. And
there was that beautiful crossfade shot when they went from one scene to the other, with Vel on one side of the frame and Cinta on the other side of the frame, kind of half looking at each other, and they fade in and out. So even though they're apart, they're still kind of together. But I'll be interesting to see how things go down on Ferrix at the hotel.
Yeah, and again, like as I said in the intro, it's like we're all the threads are pulling together, because now we have Cinta there, we have Bix there, we have like Dedra is there. Did I imagine it, or was there when they were torturing Pack that there was the torture droid in there? I didn't see it,
but
he's in the same kind of position. Remember how like Han was like in Empire, where he's they're putting stuff in his back and stuff, and I wonder. But again, another devious play from our friend Deirdre. Like, no, I want her to see him.
And then
she walks in and like he's all broken. She goes, "Oh, get him out of here now! What are you doing?" Mm. It's like, you know, she's playing good cop, bad cop, all in one. I'm like,
but it's interesting and well done by the showrunners, Tony Gilroy and the director, that up until now, I've been kind of pulling for Dedra to get the recognition she deserves and to work through it. But then we're suddenly reminded that, oh no, Dedra will torture people when necessary, and she is an evil Empire villain.
Yeah, this is true, but also we have to remember that, like, Cassian kills people at will.
Yeah.
So, like, it's all grey areas. I mean, like, not that I'm defending, you know, sort of like Deirdre here, but, well, I am. But
well, Steve Barr, I think we'll keep the... I know we missed out on Space Miami, but I think he will kill some people on Narkeena 5, so to keep his... Yeah. One kill on every planet.
Keep his quota up.
Because he will obviously have to go back to try and find his cash in the top of the shower. So he'll probably need to kill one of the cleaners there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there'll be a knife attack in his hotel room. He'll probably put somebody down. But yeah, and again, we're on. Yeah, everyone is doing everything within, not even within their means, just anything they want to get things done. Yes, it's not, you know, it's not like black and white and all the rest of it. No. So yes, and Deirdre does torture people to get what she wants, but then we also saw in the, you know, in the raid on the garrison, we saw them holding, you know, children,
yeah, family
at gunpoint. So,
and I don't doubt Cinta would have popped one of them if she needed to.
I'm surprised, like, when they left her to look after the family with a couple of, like, Imperial guards, I'm surprised everyone was alive at the end and we didn't just cut to some, like, I wanted a Reservoir Dog scene with, like, you know, like, Cinta's there, like dancing around with a knife.
No loose ends. No loose ends.
Exactly. But again, I think that's Tony Gilroy, there's no clean-cut heroes in this.
No.
It's, you know, it's all very
well, that's
great.
What makes it feel so grounded, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So,
well, let's move on to someone that I know James has been waiting to see for seven episodes, and now on the eighth one we finally see him. Take it away.
Yes. No, it's you know, I mean, I've been itching for them to pull in Saw Gerrera into this, obviously, because he's epic and his character is like in the grey area. I mean, if there's a dark grey on the good side of the Force, and that will be Forrest Whitaker, that will be Saw Gerrera's character. And it's like...
One to the left of black.
Yeah, exactly. So on your HDR scale on your TV, he's just not quite... Yeah, but just great. And again, like, we talk about the colour palette and everything, and we cut to Luthen sort of taking his trip and finally taking off that wig and the cloak and going back to the, you know, the Luthen we want. And he flies into Segre Milo, and we see this panning shot and their lookout scout with the sniper rifle. I think it's pretty much just one of those that's in Rogue One, isn't it?
Yeah, he is in Rogue One.
When they take the pilot to see Saw Gerrera, I think he's there and he's great. Anyway, and we see.
But
the
I almost put that into my own in Star Wars moment of how you can just have a character standing there, not moving, and be so intimidating and tell such a long story. It was like Boba Fett, you know, he just stood there and you knew that there was a massive backstory. And I'd love to see the backstory story of the guard
of this character. Yeah, no, exactly. And I'd also like, does he unmask and he can talk without that mask, or is he just breathing off right? Exactly. I paused on that and like looked at the costume design on him. And everything. But and while I was pausing on that, obviously we're looking at these X-Wings, and these X-Wings are like grey and they're dirty, and there's none of the pretty sort of like coloured markings that we have, you know, once we get to Yavin.
Yeah. Thanks again to, if I may, thanks again to Wikipedia and the internet. These are actually not
the
X-Wings.
What?
The internet.
They're not X-Wings?
No, they're a precursor to, they're literally the model before the X-Wing, and they're known as a Z-95 Headhunter. But they're just the model before the X-Wing. So
what's the difference? Do they not, they do not open into X-Wing?
I'm not sure of the difference between them, but their shape is just slightly different. From what I've read, the next model is the X-Wing after
the
this
X-Wing.
One.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's you can see the early bones of the X-Wing in those, and like you were saying, you know, go ahead about the look and feel of the ship.
Well, the look and the feel. I mean, they're obviously like their workhorse sort of like fighter ships. They're, like I said, they're not shiny and like these guys are like hiding as Luthen points out, they're hiding in cold. dark caves.
Yeah.
So these are like just battle scars, sort of like just, again, back to the whole Saul Guerrera sort of mantra. It's like, he doesn't need any of the fancy sort of things. He's just, he is just focused on what he's doing.
But wasn't that exchange in the beginning
really
good? That's
what I'm just getting to. Like, the banter between Skarsgård and Whittaker is brilliant. It's like where they're like,
Was it you?
Well, I wouldn't say that. I would say this if it was you. Well, so it was you. No, yes. Let's just agree.
Exactly
that it was,
how you would act, you know.
Exactly. So you're double bluffing my triple bluff, and therefore I am bluffing you back. Again, we see two different factions of the rebellion sort of like bantering against each other, and then we get into it, and Luthen's like, we need to pull together, Saw. You know, oppression breeds rebellion, as he's talking about how like he's happy for the Empire to start crushing systems so that it forces people to join them. And then Saw rants on about like, you're all lost, all the other factions are lost, I am the only one. And clearly, much as I love him, I'm sure all the other factions are thinking the same as well. They all have their own agendas, and they all think they're right. And I love it when he's like, and then he challenges Luthen, like, but I've known you for so long, and but what are you, Luthen? What are you? And his response is just brilliant. It's like Oscar. It's like, I'm a coward. I'm terrified of the Empire's power will grow beyond the point where we can do anything to stop it. And I think that's just it. Luthen is so exhausted now of trying to get these lot to pull together no matter what he does. I mean, he takes out, he steals the money from the Empire. He red flags them, so they're forced. In his theory, he's like, he's now forced Saw Gerrera's hand, and everyone has to join together now to work as a team. And then again, God bless, Forrest Whitaker, and then just the chuckle from Saw Gerrera.
Yeah.
No sale today, Luthen.
Yeah, I know. That was brilliant, wasn't it? No matter, the price was just too high.
The great thing is, he's like, he's living in a cave and all the rest of it, but he still has the money to buy the parts, should need them. And he's like, give me the parts. And he's like, no, they're not, they're not for sale for money and stuff.
Yeah, because he wanted
to. He's so stubborn.
Yeah, because he's trying to get him to help a person called Krieger. And he says, they need air support. So obviously, Seoul has fighter ships and is almost like an air force, it seems.
I want to see Saw Gerrera manning that ship. I want to see a space battle with him
I think there's stuff to come, because there's a shot in one of the early trailers, which I won't bring up, because I hope everyone's forgotten it. And it has some weaponry that has never been seen before. And I can't wait for that episode to come, because there is a space battle coming. But to go back to Saul's speech, Saul's speech, he says, Krieger's a separatist. So you've got your separatists.
Yeah.
Maya Pease is a neo-Republican. So they want to bring back the Republic. And then the Gorman Front and the Partisan Alliance, they're sectorists. So they want kind of the sectors to all be individual. And they're human cultists as well, and galaxy petitioners. So there's people that want to separate, part of the rebels want to separate the humans from everyone, while everyone else. So they are very different in their goals and what they're trying to achieve.
So many different agendas. Yeah. And they're making the struggle to get everyone together even more tricky. And it's curious how, we'll see how Luthen and Mon Mothma pull it off, because they clearly do. Because
exactly.
Three, 4 years down the timeline?
Yeah, Mon Mothma's in charge. So. Yeah.
Yeah,
and was there anything else you wanted to talk about Saul?
I need to maybe go back and scrub and freeze frame it. I just wonder if how much of his injuries and his robotic parts are in place at this point.
I think he's in good condition.
He's in good condition at this point. Yeah. So I'm just wondering if we get to see him get bashed up a bit, because he's got a metal leg by the end, and he's got the breathing apparatus, etc., and all of that. But hold on, that happens. Actually, even when that happens towards the end of Rogue One anyway, so that could well have been in that. Yeah. But anyway, it's I'm just excited to see more of him, and I think I'm hoping. Does he feature in The Bad Batch? Do they come across him at some point?
No, but he was in either Rebels or The Clone Wars. I think it was in Rebels, actually. that he was a young Saw Gerrera. So he was in that, but I, you know, the ball gullet. Ball gullet. Definitely an only in Star Wars thing. That was the most ridiculous thing that it was ever in the it can fry. Like, how do they communicate with it? I think we've done this before when we did our Rogue One review.
Oh, with the dinner party.
Yeah, and listeners, if you we did do a Rogue One rewatch, so if you want to have a if you need a Saturday or night movie, it's one of my favorite Star Wars films, and go back and have a listen on our podcast. So so I think that Saw is in full fighting condition at the moment.
Fully fighting fit, and yeah, let's wait to see him in the cockpit. But and then on the flip side of, you know, Saw's dark, cold, dirty cave, then we obviously jump to the warm, opulent world of another Mon Mothma party. I mean, that woman's partying hard, I have to say. It's
like, well, that's how deals get done, James.
So I'm doing things wrong. and before we get into the politics of this scene and all the rest of it, I just got to say, I need to see some more non-biped aliens.
Right.
In her parties and in the Senate. You know, we saw in the prequels and we saw all this, there was... I mean, I know there's a lot of plenty ridiculous CG creatures and stuff, but like, I just feel like people wearing sort of head prosthetics in her party is not enough for me. So I want to see some slithery sort of seven-limbed creature sort of like eating some like pickled frogs in the corner of her, her parties or something.
Because Jabba the Hutt was such a departure of what you think an alien would be when we finally saw him. He certainly wasn't what we were expecting and wasn't what they planned either. And so to see, so you're right, some non-bipedal aliens would be great, but I'm thinking that it's, I know that the Empire is very anti-alien and really we only see humans within it, and so maybe even in the Senate parties now, the only ones that slip through the door are the humanoid aliens that are bipedal.
Maybe so. The rest of them may have just fleed now for fear of what's coming. So maybe, and again, like we, you know, when we saw the Senate, all those empty pods and all the different senators who weren't there. So maybe that. Maybe you're right. Maybe it was like Palpatine's cleared them all out, and they're like, screw this. We're like, we're going to go hide on our own. You know, we're going to basically go and hunker down and hope they don't come find us.
Yeah.
So you're right, but it just. We are in the Star Wars world, and it's just so like rich in everything. Everything else we've seen, all the different planets and different things. I just feel that we are very sort of like heavy biped.
So well, it's funny.
One quibble.
Yeah, I love this series, and it's very Star Wars. But I still occasionally would like to have my Star Wars itch scratched, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, like when we see Luthen flying through space and in his ship, and we actually have a close up on his navigational thing, and you see the bip, 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 little squares, and he's flying through the you know, I find that so great to just be in space and on a Star Wars ship flying through space and approaching a planet. So I would like to see some more of that.
Again, we're in Mon Mothma's party here, and she's now she's basically, she's not after money, she's now after votes, because according to her douchebag husband, she's saving the Empire from the Emperor.
Yeah, Perrin.
And he, you know, Perrin, and his was his comment about like, oh, she's trying to feed the galaxy, I'm just going to feed myself. And it's like, that sounds about right.
Yeah, charity begins at home.
That was it. Charity begins at home. Tay's sort of quip back at him. It's very good. But she passes by and she joins the discussion of the senators on both sides of the fence regarding Palpatine and the PORD, the public order resentencing directive. And it's, you know, I live in America and I know you did, Jonathan. And like, some of this politics is just getting a little bit close for home. And so we have the surveillance.
I think it really is a reflection of real world. I think it's it seems that the elite versus regular people. And there was that line of like, you know, if you've done nothing wrong, you've got nothing to fear. Mm-hmm. And then Mon Mothma says, I fear your definition of wrong.
Yeah, yeah. And before that, there was surveillance and prosecution without limit. Yeah. And that leads into, if you've done nothing wrong, there's nothing to fear. And then somebody mentions dangerous times. And you know, the emperor is protecting us with this public order. And it's very 1984. It's very George Orwell. And it's, you know, Mon Mothma, the net is closing. And she's desperate to do something about it. And
there's a saying, it's like many bad things have been done in the name of safety. And it's an easy excuse for authoritarian regimes to say, I'm doing this to keep you safe.
Well, exactly. And I think that's it. I mean, like the imperial propaganda is working a treat.
Because
and I know that this is what Luthen wanted. Like when we were back on Narkina 5, one of the other inmates like mentions they slaughtered a garrison on Aldani. Yeah. And then in Mon Mothma's party, they said, "Oh, but you should have thought that the rebels should have thought about that before blowing up Aldani." And so things escalated from nicking a bit of money and killing a couple of people on the way out the door to like the imperial sort of like propaganda machine has painted this as them nuking it from orbit, and it's great. So then you know, then the emperor can like bring in the Pord Order, and then. And now it's like, as you said, it's like many, you know, many bad things have happened through like keeping people safe. And and they're just, as the saying goes, they're tightening the grip.
Yeah. But as we go back to the prison, when all the prisoners have the new guy and they finally get to talk to him and they're like, you know, what's everyone saying of how they've doubled all our sentences? And he's looking at them and they all suddenly realize that no one's talking about it. And no one really knows or cares, and what they thought the outside world would be outraged by that. But it's just what's happening now.
And I think also it's, I think a lot of the inmates there have like just accepted their fate, and they don't really want to even think about their numbers have doubled or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, doesn't he say when he shows him his don't look at the clock or something, because I think that'll never. Basically, you'll never get out. You'll die. Basically, they'll just keep adding numbers. Because I mean, why would you? If you've got a perfectly healthy, free workforce,
it's a slave labor for them, isn't it?
Slave labor now. And that's it. Yeah. I mean, it is going back to the design. It is the most beautiful Nike sweatshop I've ever seen. It's like down to the sneakers as well. It's like, God damn.
Nike, if we're still open for sponsorship, we can easily edit that out.
Or like we'll take it up with Adidas and go the other way.
Yeah,
anyway,
exactly.
Sorry about that. We'll take any money. We have no morals.
All right, well, why don't we head over to the notes section, James, and tidy things up there. Okay, we're back with the notes section. James, you have any notes?
I just liked there's a couple of things I forgot to mention earlier, but like Luthen has a new name now, doesn't he, as well? He's now Axis.
Yeah.
It's like, it's the name that Dedra has given him because he is obviously the Axis, the center point she feels is the person that is pulling everything together. So, I mean, she's bang on the money again, isn't she? So, I like that. And so, other sort of notes and thoughts? I mean, I thought it was great to see Bix again.
Yeah.
And going to costume, I really like her outfit. She looks like a great female Solo in this. She looks
Han-esque
outfit.
That is
great.
True.
And that, and her sort of running from the stormtroopers and all that, and then I think it's exciting to see her back in play, and I'm pleased that she wasn't just sort of discarded.
I look forward to her being a major character going forward.
Yeah.
But she will die in the next episode now, of course.
Yeah, you've killed that one off as well. Yeah, without risking killing her off, without sort of Adriana Ajorna losing her job, I'm sorry. But I think I think maybe her and Cinta and stuff, I think we might be seeing sort of like the formation of like a cell of rebel fighters.
I think they're going to bust her out of the hotel, and
I don't think they even need to. I think Dedra's too sneaky. I think Dedra's going to let her go and watch her.
All right, that's interesting.
Yeah, no, but
we have a gentleman's bet on this. I think that Mum has discovered the tunnel into underneath the hotel, and Cinta and her are going to bust her out. James thinks she's...
Slow down. I forgot about the Marva. Yeah, the Marva sort of like... Yeah, no, you're right. Well, all right, hold on. Let's go with this. Let's combine them, right?
Okay.
They are going to come through the tunnel. They're going to break her out. but Deirdre's going to put a tracking device on it or has got somebody following her.
Yeah.
Let's go. I'm going with that.
Escape is too easy. They let us
yes,
go.
Yes, exactly. They let us go. The tracking device is installed.
The other note I had was the squigs, the drink that yes. Mon Mothma had, and she refused a squid, that squig, and parents said, "Oh, I'll have hers." And basically, yeah. they drop a live bug into their drink, and it shrivels up and dies from the alcohol. And that's all part of the fun of having that drink. But it just shows how little value the elites place in any sort of life, you know.
Well, I mean, I was thinking that. I mean, I want to see the backstory of the squig worm. So, can we have a spin-off season on squig worms? Maybe animated. that is right. Like you've got Mon Mothma who's like protecting all alien life, and yet she's just declines the worm.
She realizes it's maybe a little bit too decadent, isn't it?
Or she just gets hammered on it, maybe. Too easily, and just decides she doesn't need it. While she's trying to, she doesn't want to sort of like slip up and tell people what's going on.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, well, let's. Any more notes, James?
I think I've got.
You're good. That's it for me, all right, so let's move on to the only in Star Wars section. Okay, we're back into the only in Star Wars section. James, did you have anything for us this week?
I struggle actually with that one this week. I can't think of it. I mean, I was going to revert back to my Steam billowing from I need to find another go-to than that.
Well, there was a little Steam around this week. Yeah, but the interesting thing with this is because I kind of brought it in because in Star Wars there's always something a bit silly in there, but it's so serious this that there isn't really a lot of those opportunities. So you can going forward we can think of things that are very Star Wars, that really make you feel like you're in the universe. But the one well, it's going to make it easier for me, but the one I noticed was Cyril's knotless tie. So he had part of his uniform was just like a line of material, but there was no knot at the top of the tie. So you remove the knot and you've got a space tie. So I've had
was it clip on?
Yeah, well, it just kind of like hung there on this paper clip with this gap at the top of his shirt. So I've had a space tie, space goats, and a space doctor so far.
I want to see all of that. I want to see your space doctor with four arms, with four horns on, wearing a tie,
wearing a space tie. Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, let's head over to the news section.
Oh, yes.
And here we are in the news section. And James, I know you're interested in this, and it's kind of related to Star Wars, but I think it's just part of the nerd world. There was news on The Witcher.
Somebody else brought it up on my job yesterday. Somebody showed me on their phone. I was like, really? And then we had a discussion last night, and I was trying to work it out, and then I was trying to think. I mean, obviously, it makes sense. Obviously, Henry Cavill signed up for, I guess, he must have been a 3-season deal for a certain story arc for The Witcher. Mm. And then obviously,
and he was perfect, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, he was, I mean, it was one of those when he was first announced as that, like, some people are like, no way. I can see that. And also, Henry Cavill is, I presume most people listening know that Henry Cavill is obviously awesome, but he's also a big nerd as well. I mean, if you've seen the YouTube footage of him building his own like PC, or
that's funny.
I mean, he's there for 2 hours. He put it on. he records it, and he's got his head torch on, and he's in there, and he's building his water cooled PC and stuff. So he plays his video games, and he obviously was invested in the storyline of The Witcher, and he did a great performance. And
I thought it was perfect. But I wonder if it's
perfect.
If Liam has the build, because Henry was just so huge. I see, if maybe he was working out with his brother.
Well, let's look at the Hemsworth DNA, shall we?
Yeah,
if you pay Liam enough money,
he will bulk up
and get his brother to train him. Yeah, it isn't going to be hard, is it? But I had quite an in-depth conversation. I'm like, he can't pull it off. People won't, will never, like, never accept anyone except Henry.
It's difficult to
play
change
this.
Midstream.
Yeah. Well, yes and no, but remember Spartacus?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and...
But I always liked the original guy. It was never quite the same for me, but, you know, it was still good. Yeah.
But it's still good, and what... And they overcompensated with the fact that they had more budget by the time they brought in the other Liam for that. Mm. And so it was kind of forgivable because the story's good. And also, the thing that will hold this together is I don't know where the story goes now because I was trying to remember how...
Well, we've
where
got another,
are we at
we've
to?
Got another season.
So we have one season. We have a season, so we presume we get to the end of the Wild Hunt, right? I presume the story arc is...
season three coming up.
So Cira will probably defeat the what and
well, no spoilers, James, because we've played the games and not everyone has.
Sorry, everybody. Books. But I mean,
but anyway, we're getting off target here.
Let's stay. Yeah, but then obviously that brings us on to like where Henry's going back to, and he's donning the cape again.
I know.
And I haven't seen Black Adam, so I haven't seen that. You know,
the after credit
scene. Yeah, the credit scene. So I don't know. And this also brings me on to, so I know we're off target here a little bit, but James Gunn.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
He's been signed
so
up, hasn't he?
That is exciting, man. Yeah, because I think that's a 10-year deal to control the DC universe.
Wow.
Because he's the first because he's the first person who's managed to create a cool movie in DC and then a spin-off TV series that works on the same level. Because you think about all the DC TV series we've had, like Arrow, Doom Patrol, Swamp Thing, all of those, they were their own entities.
Yeah.
And they were seen as like the poor little brother.
Right.
So like the movies and stuff was finally like, you know, with Peacemaker, it played off of, you know, Suicide Squad and it worked perfect. I mean, if you haven't watched Peacemaker, the series... Go watch it. It is great. So good. So I think, so handing it to James Gunn is good. And old Kevin on the other side has said he'd be the first to line up to see what he does.
Oh, yeah. That being same, said, actually.
He said, like, you know, he's a little bit busy till May. So basically, I think he's contractually obligated to finish up Guardians 3 and tie up some bits and pieces. But then he shifts to the other universe. And it's going to, I don't know, it's going to be interesting to see how he handles Batman and everyone else. I'm fascinated. And I don't know if Henry Cavill's Superman will be less moody or...
My favourite Superman is Christopher Reeve, funny enough. So I hope I hope he's a little less kind of introspective and we get some full on Superman heroism come back into it.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know how you keep Henry Cavill as Superman.
Yeah, well, the story's already happened.
But you're post Snyder now, and like, and you remember you had Superman losing his shit and like using his laser beams and stuff, right. And we've had Batman go after him because he's angry because he's destroyed half the city in his battles and stuff. So,
well, maybe this is the redemption arc. But anyway, let's get back
let's
to
save that for another season. We'll be back doing
Superman films in the future. So let's move on to the listener feedback. All right, so we're back in the listener feedback section. Sending your comments at the Podcastica Facebook page or the group, or you can email us at talk@podcastica.com. And the group's really fun and lots of discussion, and that's where we got a lot of our comments from the Star Wars question of the week.
And we're still waiting for the first voicemail. If you can, you know, go to podcastica.com and go to the contact page and hit record voice message on the right. You know, be brave. We want the first person to ramble back at us. I mean, like, we're doing it week in, week out, driveling to you. So, like, time to get your revenge.
Yeah.
We just record one on your phone. Or you just record one on your phone and send it on an email to us at talk@podcastica.com.
Yeah. In the, you know, get the voice memo app and send us a little voice message. But anyway, let's head to our feedback, James.
Yeah. And first letter comes in from Russell Piner. Russell says, loving the podcast, guys. Looking forward to the next episode. Andor is absolutely the world building I've been wanting from Star Wars. This is exactly how I imagined it should be. Serious, dark, and gritty. We're with you there, sir. We're with you there. He goes on to say, Rogue One is an amazing film, and I hoped it wouldn't be a flash in the pan, and I was starting to lose faith. But thankfully, Andor was created. Brilliant production, cast, music, acting, direction. Yep, agree, you're preaching to the choir there, Russell. Yes, yeah, indeed, exactly. Indeed.
And thanks for that, Russell. Mike Breckner says, Mike got this message from the Star Wars fan page, and I've been dropping, interacting with some Star Wars fans there as well. But Mike Breckner says, I'm loving the deep dive into the politics, the Empire's bureaucracy, and the viewpoint from the people's side. This is great, and I'm so glad there are so many episodes for them to flesh out even more with. The pacing and tension is so well done with all the writing.
Bianx Vargas says, it was a quiet episode where many things were being lined up for hopefully an edge of your seat episode 9. Fingers crossed emoji,
yeah.
Blushing face emojis.
Well, we'll see, because if we were sticking to the 3333, but I think this might be episode 9 will be a mid-arc episode, and episode 10 will be the finale for this arc. So we'll see. I'm looking forward to next week regardless. And Kirk Manley says, this show is absolutely awesome. I'm so loving it. It feels totally Star Wars, yet brings a level of espionage and intrigue that feels new and interesting to this universe. It feels very Blade Runner in ways. Rogue One is one of my favorite Star Wars movies, and this show is the same great vibe. Also love how it's showing us the insides of the Empire, how it runs, and what makes it tick. I really feel the frustration and desperation throughout the story that makes the development of the rebellion believable, which for me makes all the Star Wars, or the past Star Wars, simplistic good versus evil stories on some level deeper now. It's a great show. Actually, all the Star Wars Disney Plus shows have been excellent so far. Wonderful story, enriching expansions to the universe. What I love about this is really seeing the inside of the Empire, and really fleshing that out has been really cool.
Yeah. And as he mentions, the frustration and like of how to build a rebellion,
yeah,
and how we're sort of seeing all these factions like just struggling and bickering.
Yeah,
and basically playing into the Imperial's hands. Yeah, so
that's true.
And then Steve Barr says, "I feel bad for the creators of this episode having to come out so close to
House of the Dragon
episode 9."
Yeah.
I mean, there
was a lot to watch. There was a lot to watch in the last few weeks. Everything was out at the same time, and I was really surprised that HBO and Amazon went head to head with their two series, but I think House of the Dragon won that out.
It'd be interesting to see how they do that. I mean, I think it's these days with the streaming thing, like it's all right. Well, some people, I mean, like me, I'm behind. I haven't watched. I've just started House of the Dragon, and I haven't really got into the Rings of Power yet. So yeah. I mean, I think they sort of bank on people watching at their own pace.
Yeah, that's true.
To some extent, they're not concerned about sort of live numbers for like Friday night head-to-head kind of thing, because people just store it on their cloud and watch it whenever. But you're right though, Steve, there's so much to watch in the week that it's brave to sort of go head-to-head with
Do welcome all those people that have caught up with us now, and so if you've jumped on to Andor, we welcome you aboard, and hope you're enjoying the show. Alright, that's our show, everyone. Thanks for listening.
And if you want to write in or leave us a message, you can find all our information at podcastica.com. And while you're there, check out all the other shows we've got on there as well.
Yeah, there's a lot going on at the moment. And if you're listening to this on House Podcastica, but you're not interested in the other shows there, we also have a podcast just for Star Wars shows, which you can also find at podcastica.com, or search for the Star Wars TV cast on your podcast app.
And don't forget to rate it and review it, and tell your friends about it. It's good to have you on board, and we like to hear from everyone.
Yeah, and keep the feedback coming in. All right, that's our show.
Thanks for listening. I'm James.
And I'm Jonathan. And may the Force be with you.
Thank you. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.